now?
Yeah.
Okay. I have some thoughts on the Booth Dr. Mudd story, and I want to put it on tape. When Booth left Washington on the way to Virginia, he needed to see a doctor, and I have the indication that he visited two doctors. I can't remember what the name of the first one is. It's in my files. And he also visited Dr. Stone, but in each case he was afraid that the troops and the detectives would be after him, so he didn't go to either one. Now, about going to Dr. Mudd's, the shortest route to Dr. Mudd would be a route which I don't think existed in 1865. Today it is known as the Mattawoman Beantown Road, which went to the left in the earliest part of Charles County. And I visited the Dr. Sedmut home with my father when I was, say, 8 years old or 9 years old. I'm sure that road didn't exist. We would leave the route at Waldorf and go to the St. Peter's Road and continue on to Dr. Mudd's home. Now, there is one thing that just doesn't exist today, and that is there was a stream across that road, which I like to call St. Peter's Road because it passes St. Peter's. When we reached that with the horse and buggy, my father made me get out and walk across the water on a log. Now, whether the stream was so deep that the water would come into the carriage, or was so wide, I do not know, but I know it was there. Now, I don't know what kind of a road there would be out of Waldorf today to St. Peter's Road. I imagine there was a road there, but obviously Booth did not want to expose himself by going to a village such as Waldorf was at that time. It was nothing more than a crossroad, but he didn't think that he should expose himself. But when he reached to Beantown, that was his last chance to go east to Dr. Mudd's home. He must have talked it over with Harold and said he simply had to see a doctor. But he did not want to expose himself, so he remembered that Dr. Mudd was so hospitable to him when he went there to go over to George Gardner's to get to buy a horse, and it was being so late, Dr. Mudd persuaded him to stay overnight. So Booth, instead of going further down the road to the home of Dr. George Mudd, he went to the home of Dr. Sam Mudd. Now, if I were a very good attorney, I would attempt to prove in court that Booth never went to Dr. Mudd's home. The only proof that they had that Booth came to Dr. Mudd's home was the boot, and the name Booth had been scratched out of it. Who scratched out the name Booth? Did Booth give somebody his boots, which is quite possible, because he was a man of moderate means, and he had more than one set of boots. We don't know who scratched out the name Booth. So Booth was now in Beantown and decided to go east. You must remember that Harold knew every inch of that country because he had fished and hunted in the Sakai Swamp area. Why did Dr. Mudd go to St. Mary's Church in early December or late November? The reason is this. The Catholic Church had ruled, and I have the papers in my file, that everyone living south of Devil's Nest would go to St. Mary, would become parishioners of St. Mary's, and those who lived north of the Devil's Nest would go to St. Peter's. Now, Dr. Mudd lived on Devil's Nest, which was a eastern branch of the Sakaya Swamp. Also, you must remember that when Dr. Mudd graduated from medicine, he practiced medicine with George Mudd in Brandtown. And whether that was 1 year or 2 years, I don't know exactly. But Dr. Mudd at that time would go to St. Mary's Church. Why did Booth go through the Sakaya Swamp? He told Mrs. Mudd that he wanted to see Reverend Wilmer, who lived near the western end of a Sakaya Swamp. Dr. Mudd went into Brandtown that Saturday morning, which was Holy Saturday, and he had told Booth that he was a very sick man and that he should stay in bed there for possibly a week. So when he came back from Brandtown and learned about the Lincoln assassination, he did not feel that that his patient was John Wilkes Booth. Harold did all the talking, and Harold told Dr. Mudd that his friend, who gave a fictitious name, had fallen from a horse. Dr. Mudd, when he came into the farm from Byontown, he saw a Booth leaving. My good friend, Mr. Hall, said that Booth didn't come out the back door, he came out the front door. Well, we know he came out the back door because this was family information. And Hall said that Booths have passed the home of Henry Low Mudd. Well, Booth, going through the swamp road, did pass the home of Henry Low Mudd. Henry Low Mudd Jr. lived on the Sakaya Swamp Road, just above it. I have been to that home myself. When the adversaries of Dr. Mudd claim that food was sent to the home of Dr. Samuel A. Mudd in anticipation of the kidnap of Lincoln, that is ridiculous to the limit. The place where the food would be located or left was at the home of Dr. George Mudd. Dr. George has been very clever in identifying himself. He posed as a unionist, but he had a number of slaves, and furthermore, he was cited for selling quinine to the Confederacy. Also, his son, James A. Mudd, was involved. I can't remember exactly what, but I think it was selling materials to the Confederacy. Dr. George Mudd got by very well posing as a unionist, but he treated the Confederates in the back of his house and the unionists in the front of the house. If they stored the food for the Lincoln kidnap plan and at his home, George Mudd would not be worried too much about that. It was simply a courtesy to Abraham Lincoln. When Dr. Mudd went to Mass at St. Peter's Church on Easter, you wonder why he would go to St. Peter's when he was required to go to St. Mary's by the Catholic Church. However, since Dr. Mudd lived on Devil's Nest, he had a choice of going either to St. Peter's or to St. Mary's. And on Easter Sunday, Dr. George Mudd came all the way from Bryantown to attend that Mass. So there must have been some sort of ceremony there on Easter, which caused Dr. George Mudd and possibly others to come to St. Peter's rather than to St. Mary's. Incidentally, Dr. Mudd's children were baptized at St. Peter's Church. So I, in spite of the fact that the church said that Dr. Mudd belonged to the parish of St. Mary's, he apparently chose to go to St. Peter's, which is closer to his home. And when he met Dr. George Mudd that at St. Peter's Church, he said to George Mudd, when you get back to Bryantown, tell the troops and the detectives that two suspicious strangers had been at his home And the detectives and the soldier didn't come on Monday. They finally came on Tuesday. Now there's one other thing. When Dr. Mudd was required to give a statement on Saturday in Bryantown, he failed to state that he had met Booth in Washington on Christmas Eve. Now, just why he did that, we will never know. Did he forget, or did he realize that he was getting involved, and maybe he better keep it secret? Now, in his statement, he said that Booth had a broken tibia. Every doctor knows the difference between a fractured tibia and a fractured fibula. If Dr. Mudd felt that Booth had a fractured tibia, he would certainly have told him to stay for as much as a week, because it was difficult to go by horseback, or anyway, with the fractured tibia. You could do that with a minor fracture of the fibula. Dr. Mudd had a reason to claim later that his patient was John Wilkes Booth, because he realized there was going to be a big reward. The 11th of March, I'm continuing talking into the recorder. There's also always been a question as to which leg John Wilkes Booth broke. At the autopsy, after the autopsy, Dr. I forget his name, gave a talk in which he described the right broken leg of John Wilkes Booth, and we were quite sure that it was the left leg. But strangely enough, no one ever asked Dr. Mudd which leg was broken. This makes up left a feeling that maybe it wasn't Booth after all that was caught. Now, in the autopsy, there's no description of them taking Booth's clothes off. They did take out a part of his neck. And as you know, the neck is in the museum in Washington, D.C. Also, they took out a part of a rib, and the rib is in the museum in Philadelphia. Now, I'm probably going to talk out of turn, but I'd like to discuss the Boynton trial in Florida. Dr. Mudd was not invited to attend his own trial, and Dr. Mudd's attorney was not permitted or not invited to visit Dr. Mudd in prison. The World Almanac states, and I have a copy someplace, it's at the Hoyt Library, that Boynton was the youngest person ever appointed to be a federal judge, and I wonder why. Well, there is one fairly good reason. Boynton was an excellent speaker, and he campaigned for one of the secretaries in New York State. I believe it was a Secretary of State, and I don't know what he campaigned for. So if that is the case, the Secretary simply told President Lincoln that he had better appoint him as a federal judge. There's always been a question about how healthy Abe Boynton was. Shortly after the trial, he died of a brain tumor. If my grandmother had the money, she would have taken this case to the Supreme Court, but she did not have funds to do that. The thing that I have always wondered about was why so many people were not tried for the Lincoln assassination. For example, Parker, who let Booth go into the box. Soldier at the Anacostia Bridge who let Booth cross the river. Lloyd at the Surratt Society who permitted items to be stored there in anticipation of the kidnap plan. And Sam Cox, who put Booth up for a day, and Jones, who put him up for 3 or 4 days, and Mrs. Quisenberry in Virginia, who gave loaned Booth a wagon and a horse and a driver, and Dr. Stewart, who redressed redressed Booth's leg, but there's some question as to whether he did anything or not. I understand that Booth did pay him a few dollars, and the Garretts, who put Booth up until he died. Yes. I guess I'm close to the end of what I was going to talk about, but there are three branches of the government: the executive, the legal, and the military. When President Andrew Johnson and the Secretary of War Stanton and James Speed permitted these civilians to be tried by a military court, they are violating the laws upon which our Constitution depends. In other words, the trial was a legal matter and should have been held by the legal department. Okay. A few days ago, I found a record indicating that Mordecai Lincoln attended Andrew Johnson for his marriage. I don't recall whether or not the wife is shown in this article, but if this is the future President Andrew Johnson, it would explain his interest in the President Lincoln and the Lincoln family. We need more thinking about that. Another thing which disturbs me is that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court published a book in which he makes some adverse remarks about Dr. Mudd. I think this is very inappropriate for the Chief Justice to do, because if the Dr. Mudd case ever got to the Supreme Court, he would have to be relieved of his part in the decision. Another observation that I would like to make is that when I sued the Secretary of the Army back in, February or so of last year, and we got a favorable decision, that decision has no influence on the Secretary of the Army because of the separation of the forces in the government, the executive, the army, and the legal. The decision of the judges was a part of the legal field, and really had no influence on the Secretary of the Army. This makes me feel too about the day of the hanging of Mr. Surratt. The Surratt's lawyers got a decision from the federal judge asking for a new trial for Mr. Surratt, and the decision was taken to the president. Actually, the president had very little interest in this. It would be the Secretary of the War in those days which would make the final decision whether or not they considered that. At the time, the president rejected the recommendation of the federal judge. I don't know. I wanted to add something to what I have broadcast on the other side. I want to explain that my grandfather, Dr. Sam Mudd, after he finished internship with Dr. George Mudd, was given a large tract of land by his father Henry Low Mudd, and my guess is that he actually didn't give them the land. He loaned it to him, and I imagine that Henry Low Mudd also paid to build the home. And in 1878, Henry Low Mudd made a will in which he finally gave that land and the house to Dr. Sam Mudd. And the land where George Gardner lived, at a spot where Booth bought the horse, also was the property of Henry Low Mudd. And undoubtedly in 1878 he gave that land to the occupant, who was George Gardner.
Well, that's all I wanted to say.
Broadcast on the other side. I want to explain that my grandfather, Dr. Sam Mudd, after he finished internship with Dr. George Mudd, was given a large tract of land by his father, Henry Low Mudd. And my guess is that he actually didn't give them the land. He loaned it to him. And I imagine that Henry Low Mudd also paid to build the home. And in 1878, Henry Low Mudd made a will in which he finally gave that land and the house to Dr. Sam Mudd. And the land where George Gardner lived, where at a spot where Booth bought the horse, also was the property of Henry Low Mudd. And undoubtedly in 1878 he gave that land to the occupant, who was George Gardner.
Well, that's all I wanted to say.